Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, welcome in, everybody. Hello, I'm Ben Kenny. It is On the Clock on Phillies 24/7 and Sports Radio WIP. A productive week of Phillies baseball. All right, first, thank you for being here, as always, listening on podcast, listening on the feed. We appreciate it. Subscribe and whatever. I'm at Ben Z Kenny on X if you want to follow me there and interact with the show. But a good week of Phillies baseball. Really all positive things to say today, which, if you know me at all, maybe that comes as a challenge at times. And I don't want to just paint, you know, the broad brush of positivity at all times. There are moments where things aren't positive. And if you listen to this show with some players, it's been the case. But so they go 7-2. They sweep a god-awful White Sox team and then come back and split on the road in Cincinnati. And maybe part of it is today. I'm recording this Thursday afternoon before the NFL draft. Part of it is maybe that today's game was so clinical and like Wheeler didn't have his best stuff but still goes 6 scoreless somehow. And the Phillies just manufacture runs, and they're playing really sound fundamental baseball in a well-constructed team with the best starting pitching I've ever seen. It's hard to be down. So they win 5-0 today to ensure the sweep. Had they lost today, obviously the tone's a little different. But I guess where I want to start, and we have a lot to get to today, I have the things that matter from the week, obviously starting pitching notes to come, and then the big controversy, Taijuan Walker versus Spencer Turnbull. We'll get to that. A Rojas mea culpa. He's playing great. So a lot of Phillies-related things along those lines. A Mike Trout update, as we'll have every week now until he's traded to the Phillies. And then some MLB-wide stuff. Some pitcher stuff. And mainly, this thought on the best front offices in the sport, because I think the Phillies kind of got jobbed. So we'll get to all of that. But I wanted to start with the general idea that, okay, beating the White Sox, sweeping the White Sox at home, should be kind of expected. And I'm texting with my buddy during the series. It just felt so easy from start to finish of that series that I kind of felt off guard. It wasn't really normally what you see from a Phillies team that I've grown up watching. They always struggle with those teams. Yet, you have two pitchers carry no-hitters into the 7th or 8th. The offense is dynamic. And they come away with the easiest sweep ever. So that happens, and that should be expected in a team or with a team that has expectations as high as they have themselves discussed. So that's a given. I'm not surprising anybody by saying they should have swept him and they did, which, give them credit, but we're not breaking records here. Going on the road, and I know the Reds aren't a juggernaut, but the idea of, okay, you have a 7-game week, and you're starting a road trip that's in Cincinnati, then San Diego against a good Padres team. Then you go to L.A. against the not good Angels team, but they're not dead yet, and it's on the West Coast. Starting it off with a split is actually an extremely acceptable outcome. going on the road in any four-game series, if you tell me they split, I'm good. I'm good with that 9 times out of 10, unless it's against a terrible, terrible team. Because the worst thing you could do to stop momentum, I guess this is how I'll frame it, after the sweep against the White Sox is to go out and lose 3 of 4. And then suddenly you're like, oh, now we got 6 more games on the trip. We're not playing great. Maybe the pitching magic is gone. Totally changes the momentum. But splitting, getting 2 out of 2, which is, you're not winning divisions doing that, but it's maintaining momentum from what has been the most impressive streak of baseball they've played in April in a long time. They had a 7-game winning streak, 3 against Colorado, 3 against the White Sox, and then 1 against Cincinnati. Dropped 2 of those games, which, like, the first game they dropped, the 8-1 game, Chris Sanchez didn't pitch horribly. The defense screwed him. But you laid a dud. And the guy they had on the lefty they had on the mound pitched great. There are baseball games that you're just going to lose because you lay a dud and the other team has it that day. And that's what makes winning streaks so impressive, is because you avoid that dud every time. But then when you get the next day, when Turnbull deals and a bullpen implosion happens, again, that could be a turning point to something negative. But this is about the team's construction, both, I think, mentally, but also in terms of the roster. That you turn around, oh, they've lost 2 in a row, and they're in danger of maybe halting all the momentum they had. Oh, here's Zach Wheeler. And even when he doesn't have his best stuff, 6 shutout innings, gets the big outs when he needs them. Umpiring was totally horrendous, but still he battles through. It's like, it's a testament to the team, and that means the guys on the field. It's a testament to how the team is built, though. They are able to, or they're almost non, what's the word? They are almost losing streak proof because of the pitching. And again, maintaining momentum in the 4-game series in Cincinnati. So that's my general takeaway from the week. Even if they had lost today, I still think I would have been positive, because the reasons that they had lost games thus far has been just a weird dud with an error leading to runs. And Sanchez, again, not pitching terribly, but not as good as he was. You just lost a game, and that's fine. And the other one was just a bullpen implosion. Turnbull was great. You're winning the game, and then the bullpen comes in, and Seranthony's concerning, but you're not. It's not as if the offense died or the pitching sucks. It's like, if the bullpen implodes one day, I'm not going to cast this wide net and say bad things are happening. Meanwhile, the wins are happening with the most dominant starting pitching we've seen. Fundamental offense, like single, stolen base, single run, that kind of stuff. Sac flies, not just home runs. And aside from Seranthony mainly, the bullpen has been solid. So all positive, all is positive right now. I should have pulled this up, but they are now, as a team, they're 16-10, which at this point I think is a pretty resounding success. Things are going to get tougher going on the road this week and into the future, but 16-10 at this point, with, you know, a tad of adversity at the start of the year, I think, you know, it's not an A. We're not crowning them, but super, totally acceptable start. So that's my general thoughts from the week. I think the story of the week, again, is the starting pitcher dominance, and I have stats on it in a second, but that's the leading story. If I were to write, or if I were to focus on the thing, that's the thing. And even in the bad outings, quote-unquote, I need to look up his game log. Because I really hope they turn that Turner play to an error. Partially because I have Chris Sanchez in fantasy. But also because, here it is. So he only goes 3 innings. He gives up 1 earned run, 5 runs. He was a little bit off. But 1 earned run in 3 innings, then the rest of the guys behind you screwed it. That's Chris Sanchez. If that's the worst you get, I mean, you're having one of the more incredible weeks ever. So I'll get more into the starting pitching, but that's my lead story. Another big thing, which we will expand upon in a second, 2 totally divergent hitters. And 2 guys that we've criticized here, one of whom I had high expectations for entering the year, that is Nick Castellanos, who I thought would be worth more to the Phillies than he would elsewhere. That's why I didn't want to trade him. And Johan Rojas, who I had little to zero expectation for. I thought he would kind of be a liability on offense. And he was for a week or 10 days or 2 weeks. And now suddenly the guy can hit. And he looks better. And things are starting to click. which there's going to be up and down. So again, not crowning him, but their paths right now are pretty divergent. Castellanos continues just to scrape the bottom of the barrel. Where I saw this, Johnny Heller puts out good stats on X or Twitter, if you will, and he had this yesterday. If Alec Bohm struck out in each of his next 119 plate appearances, Bohm, who's red hot, by the way, and we'll talk about, he would still have a higher OPS than Nick Castellanos. It has been remarkably bad for him. And maybe there's a glimpse here or there. He'll hit a double and then come back and go 0 for 4. Meanwhile, Rojas is starting to trend in the right direction. So that's a big deal from the week. Another big building block, it feels like, in Alec Bohm, who was fantastic, even in the loss, went 4 for 4, seeing the ball great. I'm going to expand upon these things in a second. But the other big stories need bullpen consistency. And that's really a Sir Anthony thing. Orion Kerkering might bring it. And the team need is clear come deadline. And I'll get to that in a minute. I want to start, though. Things that matter, as we always do, after a general discussion about the week. Things that matter from the week. Like, there are sometimes smoke screens that, frankly, happens, but, you know, you're not going to, like, if Bryce Harper has a bad week, I'm not going to come on and say that he's turning the corner, bad, struggles, blows, any of that. It's like, that doesn't matter. But there's stuff that does matter from the week. And number one, by far, first and foremost, is what Ranger Suarez continues to do. Ranger started one game this week. That was the game in Cincinnati. He goes 7 scoreless, masterful again. 2 hits, 5 strikeouts, 1 walk. No one left on base, which lowers his season statistics to remarkable numbers. 33 innings so far in 5 starts. 18 hits, 5 runs, only 2 homers. 32 strikeouts. He's an ERA of 1.36. That's an easy way to look at it. And I like to do that. I like to use the fantasy way of looking at things in terms of, like, okay, the best pitchers in fantasy are the ones that get the strikeouts, they don't give up the runs, they'll win games or whatever. He is the number one pitcher in fantasy right now. He's 4-0 with a 1.36, a whip of 0.7, and we're going to do this every week. Talk about where's Rangers' place in baseball right now. And I don't know, last week I still was on the fence of, all right, he might just be a really good 2. Or he might be a 2. As in, okay, he's the best 3 in baseball. But the guy might also be a number 2 pitcher. He's just on a staff with 2 1s. Or a 1 and whatever you want to call NOLA. Haters. But now, Zach Wheeler leads the NL Cy Young race, which, incredible again today. He's been awesome. But that's not a surprise. And honestly, it's insane that it continues. It never reaches a blip. Wheeler's great. Ranger Suarez has the 9th best odds to win the NL Cy Young at 20-1. Zach Wheeler, Freddy Peralta on the Brewers, who got canned today, so he'll go down. Tyler Glasnow won't stay healthy all year. Logan Webb on the Giants, who I like. Zach Gallen, everyone on the Diamondbacks are frauds. You know this. Dylan Cease, who the Phillies will face. A Ranger's going to face. He's been good. I respect Dylan Cease. Sonny Gray won't pitch a full year. And then Suarez and Nola. Like, he is actually starting to enter the conversation of maybe this guy is one of the best pitchers in the sport. And what's changed? Does 1 7-inning shutout start against Cincinnati change it? No. But the more this continues to happen and happen and happen, eventually we might have to not resign ourselves because it's great, but just have to accept the fact that this guy might just be, it might have taken him a while to really get into the way he pitches, which to me is the most aesthetically pleasing pitcher to watch. Fields his position great, but the way he approaches hitters. And I talk about all of the arm injuries and all of the pitchers that just bitch and complain about the pitch clock and the balls and whatever that are trying to throw 103 every time they're up there. It's like, if you pitched like Ranger Suarez, you wouldn't get your arm hurt. You'd probably be more effective. So maybe we just have to accept the fact that this guy is rising, continuing to rise, and could just be a really dynamic number 2 starter. So that's the lead. Again, best performer from the week. And after the complete game shutout, to just go another seven with no runs and five strikeouts, I don't know when that streak of dominance is going to end. The other big bit is it's a mea culpa on my end, an apology of sorts. You are Phillies team leaders in hits for the week. Number one's Alec Boehm, who has been awesome. Two homers as well. Trey Turner, who we talked about last week. I don't need to do the whole Turner thing again. He's been great. He's a great player. He's going to be good. Number three, with eight hits, 8 of 23. That is a .348 average. An OPS of .810 would be one Johan Rojas. A triple, couple RBI, four strikeouts, three stolen bases. He played really well all week, and there is the clear he's hitting better because he has more hits side of it. There's also he just looks better at the plate, like delivering in big spots, singles to knock guys home. I thought my whole approach to the Rojas thing was, I think he is better served and would be better if they send him down to AAA. And then he has at bats every day. He gets better that way. Being overmatched by big league pitching, I thought, was a bit unproductive. And after a week, I thought that was still the case. I was like, they just have to send him down. I don't care about winning the games. I don't care about what he does at nine, because it's late April, and I care about how is the team going to be best set up for September and October, which gets into the Taiwan and Turnbull thing that we'll talk about. But after what we've seen over the last week or 2 weeks, I was wrong about Rojas in that maybe the best thing for him is just to figure it out up here. Because if he does figure it out up here, then he's already, there's no big jump to make later in the year. And I underestimated the ability to figure it out. I thought he would just be kind of screwed and overmatched. And he's getting better, and he looks better, and he's not there yet. But the developments are enough for me to say I was wrong that they need to send him down. Like, well, number one, the defense is enough. Again, night in, night out, incredible. But also, he's starting to figure it out, which tells you that it's possible at this level and that he doesn't have to go down and do it at AAA. So, that's great news. And I was wrong about that. It definitely, well, it makes the season easier. And, I mean, it makes the deadline a little more clear as well, which, again, things that are right down on the agenda. Below, the starting pitching for the week. I read through this, and again, I like stop and have to double take to see if it's actually legit. Now, this is a combination of the White Sox absolutely, positively blow, and this staff is pitching the best I've ever seen a Philly staff pitch in a 2 week span. The last seven games before Chris Sanchez's loss to the Reds, this was the 7-game win streak. It dates back to last week too. And then at the end, we'll throw in the Turnbull and Wheeler starts from the last 2 days. Aaron Nola, 7 2/3 innings, one run, 9 strikeouts. Ranger, complete game shutout, 8 strikeouts. Chris Sanchez, 6 innings pitched, no runs, 10 Ks. Turnbull, 7 innings, 1 hit, 6 Ks, no runs. Wheeler, 7 1/3, 1 hit, no runs, 8 Ks. Nola, 8 innings, 2 runs, 7 Ks. Ranger, 7 innings, no runs, 5 Ks. That is a 7-game win streak in which the pitchers, the starting pitchers, pitched 51 2/3 innings. That's 7 1/3 per start. Meaning, on average, the starter was going into the 8th inning. 3 total runs, earned runs from the starting pitchers. 53 strikeouts. That's more than a strikeout an inning. An ERA of .52. That is one of the more remarkable stretches of pitching I've ever seen. Now, you can add Sanchez's 3 innings, 1 run to it, but it wasn't dominant, and I want to end it there when the winning streak ended. But then right after it, Turnbull goes 5 innings, 1 run. Wheeler goes 6 shutout innings. It's not stopping. This team just might have, one of the more dominant staffs that we've seen a Phillies team have ever. Because Ranger's taking a big jump, Sanchez is getting better, and Turnbull might be good. That's one of the biggest takeaways from the week is, okay, Taiwan Walker might be taking the rotation spot, whether it's warranted or not, he is. That's the reality. Turnbull pitched like a guy who didn't want to give that rotation spot up, And, I mean, his last two starts are 12 total innings, one run in 12 innings. He's still pitching great, and there's no sign of any type of step back to what he was. So, I that's another, by the way, Jeff Hoffman-like bargain basement, look at what we found, the guy might be a stud kind of move. But, I mean, that's one of the biggest things that matter is, I mean, you project forward. How do you come in and beat the Phillies in a series if they have Nola and Wheeler pitching the way they're pitching? And then also sprinkled in are, I mean, what, two or three more dominant guys? It's insane. And it, by the way, it frees up the offense big time, meaning Bryce Harper doesn't have to hit a home run for them to win, which makes everything work easier. And the offense, as a result, is hitting very well. There's no pressing that needs to be done. Two, the bullpen is beyond saved. Like, you have Alvarado or some guys coming in and big Jeff Hoffman coming in big blowouts because he has to pitch because they don't get the guys any work because they're winning by so much. And that's good news. That means their arms are fresh. So there you go. That's a big thing that matters. Alec Bohm, I mentioned it. I want to go deeper into his numbers. He was 15 of 28 this week. Six doubles, two homers. Like real pop. Big homers. Well, you had the two homers against Crochet in the same game. But a bunch of doubles, 10 RBI, leader in that by far, three walks. It's a 5.36 average. He's red hot. But he's also kind of becoming the right-handed power bat that the team still lacks, but at least there's one guy doing it. Because Castellanos is not doing it. Romuto is on and off, but that's okay. Bohm is the guy you can plug into four and be like, okay, there's going to be guys on base. Get it done. Be the big run-producing threat in the middle of the lineup. And he's doing it. So is he the righty bat? No, I think they still have to add at the position. Mike Trout. But Bohm's play as of late has been awesome. On the other hand, yeah, the Castellanos thing. I talked about it. But he's still totally lost. And there's no real replacement. So people have brought up, oh, you got to send him down. You got to sit him. It's like, for who? He's not killing the team because... And I remember Don LaGreca, ESPN New York, did an amazing rant. When a guy called in, and the Yankees were like the best team in baseball 3-4 years ago, the guy calls in about how Joey Gallo is killing the team by playing right field and can't hit. But Joey Gallo was hitting eighth, and the Yankees were still winning, which you can't be killing the team if the team is continuing to win. So if the Phillies go on a 7 or 8 game winning streak, nobody can say that Castellanos is killing them because they're still winning, which means that they don't really need him to go crazy at the moment. So, I mean, as much as it sucks to watch him play right now, I'm letting him work through it. There's no real replacement except for more Whit Merrifield at bats, but what is that going to do? Whit Merrifield isn't changing games either. It just points you more and more and more to you need a deadline bat with pop. A righty deadline bat, whether he goes four and Bohm goes five or he plays six, you need another guy there. You can't just have the lefty power bats that they have. And then kind of sieves on the right-handed side minus Bohm. So, I'm sticking with Castellanos. You're not sending him down. He's not going to take well to that. But I'm not sitting him either. He's just somebody that I feel like the more he plays, he'll figure it out. All right, some other quick stuff that I want to whiz through before we move on. I think it's a good thing that both Turnbull and Wheeler lost their no-hit bids against the White Sox. I was producing the Turnbull game, the first one, and it isn't just that we saw it happen last year. And by the way, people called me an a-hole for thinking this, but like, it isn't just the fact that last year Michael Lorenzen's arm was already overstrained when he got here. And then they try to make him a starter to lengthen the rotation. And he goes and he's throwing a no-hitter. Not only was he already way past his innings limit through the no-hitter, his arm fell off and he was a total liability and couldn't pitch in the playoffs. But Spencer Turnbull, just 3 or 4 years ago, got hurt because the team stretched him too far in a no-hitter. He threw a no-hitter in 2021 when he was just coming up and looking really good, but the arm wasn't there yet. He goes like 130, 140 pitches, throws a no-hitter, and then the arm totally dies. He gets like four surgeries, and now it's taken him 3 or 4 years to get back to even being relevant. So it's not even the fact that those stuff just happened. But we don't, I like no hitters. I like the joy and the whole allure of baseball. I love it. I'm into it. But one thing that I have kind of moved past, and I hope everybody will eventually follow, is we don't really need all of these regular season dog piles. Is that we don't need all these regular season dog piles for no hitters or fun, stupid stuff like that when it's actually compromising the team winning down the road. Walk-off hits, 100% in, things of that nature in, but pushing a pitcher past where he's actually comfortable pitching, just in the name of all of the old-school baseball hardos to go, oh, he threw a no-hitter. Back in my day, Nolan Ryan would throw five a year. And then they go through, oh, Nolan Ryan threw this and Nolan Ryan that, and this guy used to throw 500 pitches. It's like, okay, I get it. I get what baseball was, and I appreciate that. A perfect game might be a little different because of how rare it is. There are no hitters thrown every year. It feels like there's one every month. Once the allure of it has dropped off, which it has, and the combined no-hitters happen too, I don't need to push my guy just so I could say, oh yeah, I saw him throw a no-hitter. I'm good on that. And I'm glad their no-hitters got broken up, both Turnbull and Wheeler. Wheeler probably could have gone and done it, but I don't need him doing it. I don't need to see him throw a no-hitter on a Saturday in April that has even a minuscule chance of affecting how he is later in the season. They should be on whatever pitch limits or whatever plan the coaching staff has them. And just because you haven't given up a traditional hit shouldn't be some reason to keep him in the game. So sorry for people that think otherwise and hated to see them lose it. I was happy they did. Like, save the arms. We don't need a big dog pile in April. I want to win a World Series. So that's that. Sir Anthony Dominguez might be lost. 1 1/3 innings, 4 earned runs, 3 walks this week. But Orion Kerkering might be taking that spot as he has come back. Come back kind of quietly. Looks nasty, though. He's going to be a big piece of the bullpen. Give Sir Anthony time to work through it. I don't think Sir Anthony's cooked. I think he'll be okay. I'll do Turnbull versus Walker next segment. And the other thing from the week, starters' effect on the bullpen, as I mentioned. Super positive. Even when it's kind of struggling, just the fact they go into the eighth every day is going to make them pitch better in September and October. And that matters. All right, it's on the clock. That's a long first segment. I want to talk Taiwan and Turnbull when we come back. Some other general takes, one of them having to do with the automated strike zone on television that I will get to. And some baseball-wide stuff. We touch on all of it. I'm Ben Kenny. It's on the clock.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week 1. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, we're back. Ben Kenny, on the clock. I'm going to have to run through this a little bit quickly. But the biggest story going on with the Phillies right now, and I mean, honestly, talk radio perspective for a moment. the perfect things to happen with this team, like them winning, number one, as a fan of the team, but number two, Schwarber continuing to hit leadoff is fantastic, and he's scoring from first on singles because he's actually deceptively quick for his build. But that continuing to happen is very critical because people really hate it and they get angry. And that makes for, in my opinion, engaging conversation. The other thing that is really good it's happening for sports talk is the fact that Spencer Turnbull, I think right now, has the lowest ERA in baseball. And he might have actually gotten passed by Wheeler. Wheeler's ERA is 1.93. I think Turnbull's is lower. Lowest ERA in baseball. And, I mean, I talked about him last segment. He's been incredible. But as that's happening, Taijuan Walker is coming back off the injured list. He's topping out at like 91 in AAA. He's getting rocked. He can't find the strike zone. All of this after completely falling apart at the end of last year. And he's just coming back in the rotation, starting Saturday or Sunday, and Turnbull's going to the bullpen. And everybody's up in arms about it, which is a good thing. It means the team is relevant. It means interesting things are happening. And as I said last week, it's a good problem to have. We are bitching and complaining about the fourth or fifth starter. That's how good the team is right now. Meanwhile, I will note, Blake Snell's been getting rocked. He's on the IL. He's having a terrible season. And I think Jordan Montgomery's fine, but you kind of see why they didn't need to go spend stupid money on these guys. They're pretty set. But Taijuan's back Sunday. And here's the thing. I think it's the right decision. I'm sorry. I know a lot of people hate it. I think Turnbull's a better pitcher, but I think it's the right decision, and here's why. Spencer Turnbull prepared for this season as a long reliever. He was obviously signed for nothing because he wasn't established entering, but he prepared for this season as a long reliever in that, okay, he'll kind of, like, he's flexible, he can come in and start, but he could also come in and beat Dylan Covey, and he's not pitching in the highest leverage innings, which kind of sucks. But he's still arm-wise prepared for it and mentally prepared. He's grinding. Taijuan Walker, and this is a knock on Walker, keep in mind that the ice is clearly thin. That Turnbull pitching this well is forcing Walker to perform. Because if Walker doesn't perform, he's gone. Come playoff time, Turnbull's in there. Which is another, I don't think it matters in the long run. Because Taijuan Walker is not prepared to go to the bullpen. So if you were going to move him there, I think you're only just affecting that. And yes, he makes money, and that's the reason why he's coming back there. But also, he's, while the arm might be cooked, he is prepared, he is a starter, he is established. He deserves to come back and at least have another chance. And, another chance is hard because the only thing that went wrong last year was not being ready for the playoffs and his arm fell off. But he deserves a chance. And it's a good thing because the only way it turns out bad, the only way, is Taijuan comes in, he totally sucks, and then Turnbull, while moving to the bullpen, also loses it, which I don't think is going to happen. If anything, it's going to keep Turnbull fresh. Again, we don't need to win every game in April and May. It's about who's going to be pitching the best in September and October. So that's the only bad scenario. The good scenario is that Taijuan Walker comes back and pitches well. The team is set up. They can go to a six-man rotation in July or August. And then come playoff time, they play the matchups. Maybe Taijuan starts, maybe Turnbull starts, but it's all hands on deck. They're bringing in Turnbull as like the Zach Eflin fireman reliever. That's a good scenario. The likely scenario is that Taijuan is average or kind of sucks, and they give him a couple months of runway, and not like getting blown off the face of the earth bad, but he's not good. And he's their clear number five starter, which, again, if a team is getting killed by a fifth starter, something else is wrong with the team. But if he's just average or not that good, and then they get to August and Turnbull takes over and all's fine, the move being made in April and May isn't really impacting the playoffs. If anything, it's keeping Turnbull fresh, which is a good thing. I think he'll be their fifth starter. And come playoff time, you often don't even need a fifth starter. That's another thing. Sanchez is probably the four. Maybe Turnbull becomes the four. But if you take a long-term outlook, all it's doing is just rearranging the furniture to keep one of the pieces of furniture more fresh. So I know what's going to happen is the first time Taiwan gives up a run or two, everybody's going to lose their damn minds and, where's Turnbull? Why don't you put him back? Taiwan sucks. And I'll understand the reaction. And again, if the team was irrelevant, nobody would react this way, which makes me happy because at least these things matter. The fifth starter matters. But in the end, if everybody just relaxes and after the anger of watching Taiwan pitch wears off, realizing that they could just plop Turnbull back in there, it means they don't need a pitcher at the deadline, which is fantastic news because they're expensive and hard to come by. It means all of their resources can go to a right-handed bat, which is exactly what Phillies fans should want. So I don't think anything bad is happening with Taiwan coming back. I think it just gives more flexibility and gives a fun storyline, obviously, to the team. All right, other quick takes. Let's do a Mike Trout update quickly. MLB leading 10th homer hit on Wednesday. He's hitting .237, whatever. He leads the league in homers. He looks incredible. And, I mean, more and more as time goes on. After the last time we checked in, he hit two home runs, both against Baltimore. He did strike out against Craig Kimbrell with the game on the line, with the bases loaded. So I said at that moment he's off my trade board. But then homering the next day put him back on our trade board. He's the guy. It makes too much sense. It's perfect. The one deficiency they have is left field, or maybe right if you count Castellanos. But then Marsh would play right or Trout would play right, and you don't need to use Whit Merrifield, and Pache can come in as a speed guy or whatever. Adding Trout to the lineup changes everything. Schwarber, Turner, Harper, Trout. That is protection for Harper, and then Boehm after Trout. Protection, production, leadership, all of it. And he's going to be hungry because he hasn't been to the playoffs in 13 years. So, trade for Trout. He's still hitting great. The automated strike zone. I have a couple minutes here. Let's do this now. People are getting pissed off on Twitter, which is not surprising. That's what always happens. So let's start there. And I understand it's Twitter. And I'm kind of strawmanning because that's, honestly, that's kind of what you have to do. If you're going to argue against something, you need to find somebody to argue with. And if they exist on Twitter, they exist on Twitter. It's a seven-pitch at-bat of some Oakland A's guy against Juan Soto in the, whatever, who cares what inning. And the first pitch is, you know, way high and outside. The second pitch is low and outside, 2-0. Then it's a curveball that kind of dusts the outside corner. Borderline pitch, called a strike. Next pitch is high and inside, 3-1 goes the count. Then low and outside, great frame job, called a strike, borderline pitch. Next one, 3-2, kind of a buckling curveball, finishes an inch behind their stupid K-box, called strike three. He said Juan Soto didn't see a strike during this entire at-bat and still struck out. Number one, the televised strike zone box is the worst innovation in sports television history. It is the worst thing to ever happen to sports television. And I don't mean that as hyperbole. Showing the people at home. By the way, the box is the same for every hitter. Altuve, Judge, difference of a foot and a half, same box. The people at home, and I would call them names, but I'm not going to, that need the strike zone box as a way to get angry at the umpires, I think is one of the most pathetic things ever. Because three of the pitches in the at-bat were strikes. They just didn't hit the magical box that was plopped there in the middle. Because maybe sometimes the ball crosses and the catcher catches it somewhere else. If a pitcher hits his spot perfectly and it's low and outside, but it's on the line, that's where the catcher was setting up, that's a strike. If it's right there, it's a strike. If he misses his spot 3 feet to the other side, catcher has to move his arm all the way, but this magical K-box said it's a strike. It's like, no, that's a ball. There's a level of arbitrariness, I think that's a word, that the strike zone is arbitrary. There's a definition, and there's a clear, like, that's a bad call, but every ball that doesn't scrape the perfect edge on this stupid box doesn't mean it's not a strike. When Juan Soto's at 3-2, and he looks at a curveball that is a strike and doesn't swing, he deserves to be sent home or strike out. He doesn't deserve a walk just because somebody can take a video of their TV screen. and see that their magical K-box didn't catch the ball. It is one of the worst recent developments I've ever seen. And, you know, it brings, someone said, well, they're not strikes at all. Next year, he could challenge the strikes. It's like, oh my God, are you kidding me? That's the next thing. The next thing is that hitters are going to be able to press a button on their bat to challenge strikes. And as a viewer of the sport, that's exactly what I need. I want to be sitting there watching TV, watching the game. I'm going to be sitting at the game, God forbid, and there's a ball that, you know, we as in the stands are like, oh, you missed that, Blue, or whatever. And maybe it's a strike, maybe it's not. And then we have to wait for 45 seconds while they go to the monitor, and then they go back and they announce it's a strike just for one pitch. Like, nothing I want to see more than batters challenging every other strike to see where the stupid microchipped ball crosses the plate. When, again, in reality, strikes are arbitrary. There's a level of, what's the word? Not evaluation, but you know what I mean. There's a level of seeing it, and I kind of understanding that it doesn't have to just be, did the computer tell us it's a strike? So that got me angry, and I know it. And it's going to go to the robo-umps, because that's the other thing, is Aaron Boone gets thrown out by this idiot umpire who thought it was him, but it was a fan yelling at him. And people want to get rid of umpires, and I don't get it. It's one of the more entertaining things in the sport today when a coach, true or manager, gets thrown out and is angry and argues, or the umpire misses a call, and we talk about it because that's baseball. These people just want robots to play analytics, law of large numbers, robots play the game, robots umpire the game. We just watch so that someone's math equation can work. It's like you're just losing what baseball is. That, oh, the umpire threw him out. First of all, nobody, like Aaron Boone isn't, right, nobody's going to the ballpark to watch Aaron Boone manage. They want to watch baseball. If anything, it added to it, and then it was the talk of the town for 2 days. That's a good thing. Being in the headlines is good. Unless it's for Ohtani being a degenerate gambler, allegedly. So this whole anti-umpire thing, some of them are bad, some of the calls are terrible, I get it. Doesn't mean we have to outlaw umpires and just go by the stupid K-box. The strike zone box is stupid, and they should get rid of it. We should go back to having to, and NBC Philly does this, just like, give me the catcher and the hitter, and I can see if it's a strike. If it looks like a strike, it's a strike. So there you go. All right, it's on the clock. I'm Ben Kenny. Our mushing is working, by the way. I should know Whit Merrifield did have a better week than he's had after, I don't know, I called this signing a total bust. He hit a homer, and he's been whatever. He's fine. He's so average off the bench, it's insane. Not close to an everyday starter. And the people that said that he was overrated and not a good signing, kind of right, even though the mushing is working because Merrifield had a homer and some hits. Rojas is good now. So hopefully Castellanos and Taijuan Walker are next in the mushing on this show. But there you go. All right, I'm Ben Kenny. It's on the clock. That's all the Philly-centric stuff we have. I want to come back, talk about the top front office executives. The Phillies were way down on the list for some ungodly reason. And then we will look ahead to Phillies Padres coming up this weekend. That's next. It's on the clock. All right, we're back, Ben Kenny. It is on the clock leading into the end of the show. The Athletic anonymously polled MLB front office executives, and I wanted to quickly touch on this. I'm not going to do this whole break it down, and I would rate the guys instead. But here it is. What are the top 10 front offices in MLB, how 40 executives voted? Front office as a whole. Not just GM, but the whole thing. Number one is the Dodgers. And I will just add my anecdotal, or the minute I hear that name and what I think of. The Dodgers, who are well-run, whatever. They build good teams for the regular season. They aren't built for the playoffs. They don't win in the playoffs. But because they lucked into Ohtani, the luckiest free agent thing of all time, that he would take the contract he did, that he wanted to be in LA, and all the Dodgers had to do was cut payroll. Lucky. All the Dodgers had to do was cut payroll. Lucky. Which led them to lucking into Yamamoto. I don't want to say the word 50,000 times, but it was the luckiest offseason I've ever seen. Because that happened, they're number one. Awesome. Number two, Tampa Bay Rays have won nothing. They're a cheap team every year that's maximized to make the playoffs. But there's a reason they don't win in the playoffs. Because they don't have the requisite, you know, team foundation to do it. They're scrappy. It's the same them and the Brewers or them and, you know, it's the curse of the small market team. I get it. But it's also like they're built to win games over the large sample. And the Dodgers are like this too. They're not built to win in the small sample. So owners and these executives love the guys that do less with more. When doing less with more is just you're good, you're relevant, great. But you're not being the best front office or the best executive when you don't sign anybody. So no results from the Rays. Number three are the Braves. That's valid. Out of the Braves, number one. They are the best run team in the moment. Honestly, I'd have the Phillies two or three, but they're not even close. Guardians, number four. Same thing. Less with more. And they're they're really good this year. And that I'm intrigued by the Guardians. I love Jose Ramirez. He's one of my favorite. If I could, you know, redraft everybody and take a guy, Jose Ramirez is right up there on the list. Switch hitter, really good third base, pop, speed, all of it. The Guardians are 18-7 somehow. And that's a legit 18-7. So, okay, whatever. I'll give you the Guardians. Number five are the Orioles. I'm okay with that, even though this is the good swing. I think if you asked them 5 or 6 years ago, they executed the rebuild effectively. They were good a decade ago. They were bad for 3, 4, 5 years. They got good players. Now they're back. Okay, yeah, good front office, sure. Still, no results. They made the playoffs like once or twice with Adam Jones. This year's team made it last year. But I think it's the preemptive crowning. Part of this is, can you actually build championship teams? And that isn't what the next team does, but they're on it nonetheless. It's the Brewers. Because they operate fine or well in a small market. And they had a good-ish window with good starting pitching that they went to the NLCS. But there's a reason all these teams lose. It's because they aren't actually built perfectly. Like, if the Diamondbacks are on this list, oh, which they are, they're number seven. How are the Diamondbacks well-run? They've been largely irrelevant for 20 years, minus last year. I think it is a total overreaction to what happened immediately last year. The Diamondbacks, here's their, I don't want to go through their whole thing, but they're pretty much saying they're a great franchise because they got Merrill Kelly from Korea, getting Zach Gallen in a trade, drafting Corbin Carroll, and that's it. It's like, all they had to do was luck into a World Series appearance, and now they're one of the best front offices. And going back, the Brewers, I respect the Brewers. I do. They're not one of the best front offices in baseball. Like, we're missing one here. I wonder who it is. Rangers are number nine. Okay, fine. They're good. Whatever. I don't want to argue that either way. The Yankees are number 10. And finally at 11 are the Phillies, which is kind of an embarrassment that these people had them at 11 when they're the class of baseball at the moment, one of the classes, one of the best run teams, clearly. They're down at 11 behind teams that just like kind of win a little bit with no resources, which I guess that's what they all get off on. All right, quick MLB news. The Orioles did call up Jackson Holliday and Heston Kjerstad. So more young talent on the way. They're really good. So I do respect the Orioles. I don't want to lump them into the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks being on the list is just such an embarrassment. Teams were monitoring. Guardians, best record in baseball. Impressive. Yankees and the Orioles battling in the AL East is going to be sick. They're both really good. The Royals, Tigers, and Pirates are either fun or, you know, they're kind of puffy. I think the Tigers could actually be, you know, a little bit above average. I don't know if those teams are actually good. And then the AL West, oh my God, the AL West blows. So the Astros just got swept by the Cubs. The Astros suck. Worst teams in baseball. White Sox 3-22. Marlins 6-20. Rockies 6-19. Astros 7-19. They're worse than the A's. Fifth worst run differential in baseball. They suck. And the entire AL West has been pretty putrid. And let me just check on the Diamond. Oh, the Diamondbacks are two games under 500. And Corbin Carroll can't hit anymore. They're bad. All right, sorry. They are overrated frauds that people should not have bought into. There you go. All right, it's on the clock. I'm Ben Kenny. We close it out coming up next. All right, it's on the clock. We're back and closing it out. Phillies Padres coming up this weekend. Getting 2 out of 3 would be a gigantic win. They're playing great baseball. But splitting Padres and Angels, just give me a 500 rest of the road trip. I'm good. Any winning record, thrilled. And then come home and continue to get rolling. But Harper's back off paternity list, by the way, and he homered. So, yeah, no real concerns with the team. Just, like, keep the pitching going and don't kill Taijuan Walker when it doesn't go well. All right. Yeah, that's going to do it for us. Enjoy the NFL draft, everybody. Enjoy the baseball this weekend, and we'll talk to you. See ya.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week 1. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.